Transmissions-based precautions, TBP, strategies. Transmission-based precautions, TBP, also called isolation precautions, are used in addition to SP when a highly transmissible pathogen or organism is identified. TBP are separated into four main categories: contact precautions, droplet precautions, airborne precautions, and enhanced barrier precautions, EBP. It should be noted, however, that precautions from these categories are not mutually exclusive. It is possible that various TBP from different categories might be used in combination. For example, disseminated herpes zoster, shingles, could call for both contact and airborne precautions. A breakdown of contact, droplet, and airborne precautions can be seen in Exhibit 3-18. The choice of which TBP to implement is based on the mode of transmission of the specific pathogen. Key point. Based on the route, S, of transmission, more than one category may be needed, for example, contact plus droplet. TBP, no matter which category or combination of categories, are always implemented in addition to SP. Exhibit 3-18, contact, droplet, and airborne precautions. Source, adapted from Catherine Shashir et al., Ready Reference for Microbes. Even though some of the processes above are similar to each other, in practice, manifestations will vary based on the specific organism and environment. For example, for C. difficile, the CDC recommends that patients with confirmed and suspected CDI, for example, with diarrhea, are placed into isolation as soon as possible and contact precautions put in place immediately. Contact precautions should remain in place for at least 48 hours after diarrhea has resolved. In addition, HCP should perform HH carefully and regularly. Patient care equipment should be dedicated to individual patients. Patients should bathe daily with soap and water. Daily and terminal cleaning protocols should be created. C. Difficile sporicidal agent, Epiolist K agent, should be used for daily cleaning of CDI patient rooms, and also post-transfer/discharge surfaces and equipment should also be cleaned daily, especially high-touch surfaces. Other areas where patients were should also be cleaned using an appropriate cleaning agent. If a patient needs to be transferred, the receiving ward/facility should be forewarned so contact precautions can be maintained at the new location. In addition to these precautions, the IP should work with clinical and laboratory personnel to confirm CDIs and develop a safe antibiotic therapy regimen to treat infections. Confirmed results should be shared immediately with care providers and IPC personnel to assess for appropriateness of testing. Facilities should create CDI prevention strategies as part of their overall IPC strategy, institute careful surveillance and monitoring of CDI rates, and provide staff with appropriate education. We will now briefly examine TBP and EMDR-OS before moving into more detailed discussions on contact, droplet, airborne precautions, as well as EBP, concluding with protective isolation. TBP and EMDR-OS. TBP represent a key component of any facility's protocols for preventing and controlling the transmission of infectious agents, including EMDR-OS. EMDR-OS are microorganisms that are resistant to one or more classes of antimicrobial agents, which makes controlling them and preventing their spread extremely important. The IP must ensure that all staff receive adequate training and education on the impact of EMDR-OS together with strategies for their prevention. It is important to note that not all EMDR-OS are alike. It is, therefore, important to not place patients with different types of active infections in the same room. In other words, whether initiating contact or droplet precautions, patients should not be cross-cohorted if they are infected with different organisms. For example, a patient with a MRSA infection should not share a room with a patient who is infected or colonized with VRE. Supplemental interventions. There are times when baseline transmission-based prevention strategies may not help meet infection reduction goals, for example, during an outbreak. In these instances, the CDC suggests that IPs consider initiating supplemental interventions. These interventions are considered to be supplemental for a number of reasons. Unlike baseline infection prevention strategies, these interventions may be relatively new. For example, they may have theoretical support, but lack evidence-based support, they may be costly, or they may be logistically difficult to implement. In addition, the CDC cautions that these interventions may have unintended consequences, which must also be taken into consideration prior to initiation. Using CDIs as an example, the following table gives a few possible supplemental interventions that could be initiated, as identified and suggested by the CDC, Exhibit 3-19, examples of potential supplemental interventions for CDIs. Source, adapted from CDC, CDI prevention strategies. Key point, IPs should always refer to their facility's specific IPC policies when determining how to follow SP and TBP contact precautions. Contact precautions are TBP used to reduce the risk of contamination from and transmission of pathogenic microorganisms spread by direct or indirect contact with the patient or the patient's environment. Contact precautions are mostly used in healthcare settings to prevent the transmission of MRSA and C. difficile, as well as other EMDROs. However, contact precautions may be used for other microorganisms as well, for example, Candida auris. Key point. Contact precautions are required even if HCP has no direct contact with the infected patient. The high levels of environmental microbial contamination and the persistence of microbes on high-touch surfaces support the rigorous use of contact precautions by all who enter the room of such a patient. In acute care, patients who require contact precautions should be placed in a private room. If a private room is not available, patient cohorting should be implemented after consultation with an IP. Staff must change their gown and gloves between patients, even if both patients share a room or one or both are on contact precautions. And proper HH should always be followed between glove changes. Gowns and gloves must then be removed when exiting the patient's room or other area of placement, such as an anteroom. When gown and gloves have been removed and discarded, HH must be performed. Gowns may not be worn outside areas designated for their use, for example, patient room, cubicle, treatment room, and are not reused. Lab coats, scrub attire, and personal garments, for example, sweaters or jackets, are not to be used in lieu of institutionally provided gowns for contact precautions. All equipment should be disinfected prior to it leaving the room of a patient under contact precautions. If this is not possible, any equipment used by a patient under contact precaution should be taken to a reprocessing or soiled utility area. It should be placed in a plastic biohazard bag or another appropriate container. For example, used needles or razors should be disposed of and transported in FDA-approved sharps disposal containers. Contact precautions are typically discontinued when signs and symptoms of the infection have resolved or according to pathogen-specific recommendations. The CDC has published a contact precautions guideline table. It and other additional resources are available on the CDC's website. As an example, while performing an admissions assessment, a nurse identifies a major, uncontained draining wound in the patient's abdominal region. Following TBP policy, the nurse should immediately place the patient on contact precautions. Droplet precautions. Droplet precautions are TBP that prevent the transmission of diseases caused by large respiratory droplets that are generated by coughing, sneezing, or talking. Diseases transmitted by the droplet route include, but are not limited to, influenza, pertussis, and bacterial meningitis due to Neisseria meningitidis. For patient placement, single rooms are preferred. However, patients with the same disease may share a room. The door to the room should be kept closed. Priority should be given to patients with excessive sputum production when single patient rooms are in short supply. Patients must be separated by at least 6 feet. Privacy curtains should be drawn between patients, and immunocompromised patients should not be placed with patients on droplet precautions. Ambulatory patients should be instructed on cough etiquette and respiratory hygiene and be given masks until they can be placed in an examination room. If a patient does need to leave their room once placed under droplet precautions, they must wear a mask. Discontinuation of droplet precautions occurs after signs and symptoms have resolved or according to pathogen-specific guidelines. Airborne precautions. Airborne precautions are TBP used to prevent the transmission of infectious organisms that remain suspended in the air and travel great distances due to their small size, less than 5 micrometers. Consequently, the concern for transmission of these pathogens in healthcare settings is not typically from face-to-face contact, but rather from airflow patterns within the facility. These diseases include measles, smallpox, chickenpox, pulmonary tuberculosis, avian influenza, and possibly severe acute respiratory syndrome, SARS-associated coronavirus. In addition to these organisms being transmitted into the environment by breathing, Some procedures can aerosolize infectious tuberculosis skin lesions. For example, wound irrigation, whirlpool treatment. Endotracheal intubation is another example. For acute care settings, patients should be placed in an A2R with negative air pressure relative to the corridor. If an A2R is not available, for example, they are not typically available at LTC facilities, CDC guidelines state that a private room should be used with a portable high-efficiency particulate air, HEPA, filter if available. There should be at least 6 to 12 air exchanges per hour, and air should be directly exhausted to the outside. Monitor the air pressure daily with visual indicators, such as smoke tubes or flutter strips, and electronic methods, for example, maintenance air exchange reports, when possible. The door to the room should be kept shut. In ambulatory care settings, follow protocols to quickly identify and isolate the patient to minimize HCP exposures. Per the CDC, when administering to patients under airborne precautions, all HCP must wear a fit-tested, NIOSH-approved N95 or higher-level respirator when entering the infected patient's room. The respirator should be donned prior to room entry. Susceptible HCP should be restricted from entering rooms of patients known or suspected to have measles, rubella, chickenpox or disseminated zoster, Borrelia zoster virus, and smallpox if other immune HCP are available. Immunocompromised and pregnant HCP should also be restricted from these patients. Discontinue airborne precautions according to pathogen-specific recommendations in the guideline, being sure to check national and regional guidance. Enhanced barrier precautions. Due to the risk of infection transmission during high-contact situations, especially from EMDROS, the CDC introduced a new approach to the use of PPE during patient care in 2019, Enhanced Barrier Precautions, EBP. EBP are used to prevent the transmission of EMDROS in LTC settings and nursing homes. EBP recommend that gowns and gloves be worn by HCP during high-touch activities in a residence room. They should also be applied to residents with any wounds, regardless of EMDRO colonization status. Indwelling medical devices, regardless of EMDRO colonization status. Infection or colonization with an EMDRO. A wound is generally considered to be any skin opening that requires a bandage or other dressing. Because EBP are intended for use with residents at high risk of acquiring an EMDRO, over a prolonged period of time, wound must also be understood to refer to any chronic wounds, which according to the CDC include pressure ulcers, diabetic foot ulcers, unhealed surgical wounds, and chronic venous status ulcers, among others. Given the increased risks of infection among LTC residents, EBP are particularly relevant for suspected or confirmed EMDRO infections in that setting. EBP should also be used when an LTC resident has open wounds or indwelling medical equipment, a catheter, for example. Examples of high-contact situations, as identified by the CDC, for which EBP are indicated include bathing/showering, bathroom assistance, dressing/changing clothes, especially undergarments, device care, wound care, changing linens. Unlike contact precautions, EBP implementation does not restrict a resident to their room, nor would it bar them from participating in group activities, as long as any wounds are covered and it is safe for them to move about. Therefore, due to the requirement that LTC facilities must prioritize resident quality of life, EBP should be considered before contact precautions. EBP precautions are typically maintained as long as the condition that prompted their implementation remains, for example, for as long as the resident is fitted with an indwelling device, or until their wound is healed, or until they depart the facility. The effective application of EBP requires staff participation in initial and ongoing education and training in HH and PP use, gloves and gowns, donning and doffing. If a facility has rooms containing multiple residents who require EBP, then staff members must know that they should change their gowns and gloves and perform HH between providing care for each resident. Protective environment. A protective environment is a type of TBP that is designed to protect a patient from others who may be potentially harmful to them by placing them in a specialized area. A protected environment is recommended for allogeneic hematopoietic stem cell transplant, HSCT, recipients in order to reduce the risk of invasive environmental fungal infections and other opportunistic pathogens. Facilities may choose to implement some of the measures below for certain immunocompromised patients other than those undergoing HSCT. This evaluation is primarily based on a daily absolute neutrophil count. The CDC guidelines for providing care to patients in protective environments are as follows. Precautions. HH performed before and after patient contact. HCP should use PP, gown, gloves, and mask, according to SP, and as indicated for suspected or proven infections for which TBP are recommended. For routine entry into a protective environment, HCP and visitors are not required to wear gowns, gloves, or masks. Environmental controls. Incoming air should be HEPA-filtered at positive pressure relative to the corridor, with 12 air exchanges per hour. Air pressure should be monitored daily with visual indicators. Example, smoke tubes, flutter strips. Protective environment rooms should also be fitted with self-closing doors. Environmental measures. Protective environment rooms must be cleaned with techniques that minimize dust. Lower dust levels by avoiding cloth upholstered furnishings. Wet dust horizontal surfaces. Avoid carpeting in hallways and patient rooms. Prohibit dried and fresh flowers or potted plants. Patients should receive baths instead of showers due to the aerosolization of potential fungal and bacterial pathogens. Nutrition. No recommendation is made for the implementation of restricted diets in HSCT patients. There is no evidence supporting lower infection rates among patients who receive a low bacterial diet versus a normal diet. Instead, this restriction has been shown to decrease oral intake, nutrition, and quality of life. Patient transport. Patient time spent outside of the protective environment should be limited to diagnostic or therapeutic procedures that cannot be performed in the room, for example, radiology. If protection is required, for example, if leaving the protective environment or during periods of construction, place an N95 respirator on the patient who can medically tolerate the respirator. If the patient cannot tolerate an N95 respirator, place a barrier mask on the patient when he or she is leaving the protected environment. No recommendation is made for fit testing patients for an N95 respirator. TBP in the protective environment. Implement droplet and contact precautions as recommended. Immunocompromised patients may experience prolonged shedding of organisms and may need precautions for longer than anticipated. For patients who require both a protective environment and airborne infection isolation, use of an anteroom should be considered whenever possible. Environmental controls should be followed in the anteroom as well as the protective environment. If an anteroom is not available, then the patient should be placed in an A2R with portable HEPA units if additional filtration is not installed.